Okay, last week's episode was kind of heavy, so let's get lighter on this one. We'll talk about some old school experiences, literally, and the usual shit, movies, music, and a little Yaphet Kotto.
You are my density. You are my density.
All right, so we're going to try and get light, add some levity to this. Whenever I hear any word that ends in I-T-Y, or just T-Y, really, I think of Billy Joel's Honesty, which is a great little song. It hits me in the solar plexus. My mom recently said, you know, maybe you can play guitar on some of the songs you play. I think she was basically saying, your voice sounds like shit. It needs something to accompany it. But anyway, she was just, you know, trying to get me to up the ante. To a flashback to our gambling episode. And I cannot believe, and I looked it up, I'm not a big porn person, but I looked up to see if there was a porn called Up the Ante, A-U-N-T-I-E, and there wasn't. So not that I'm going to make it, but, you know, if someone does make it, they owe me money. And yeah, really quickly on porn, it just is kind of destructive and can get just horrid. It's a, you know, ugly scene. I just try to use my brain, and my mom can turn off the podcast for a minute. But yeah, I used to go out with this girl, and she would kind of call her, like, you know, mental memories, you know, her spank bank, which I always thought was pretty clever. And I think we all make our withdrawals from our own spank bank once in a while. But anyway, yeah, this will be a quite bad version of Billy Joel's Honesty with guitar. But, you know, let's give it a shot.
I can always find someone to say they sympathize if I wear my heart out on my sleeve. But I don't want some pretty face to tell me pretty lies. All I want is someone to believe. Honesty is such a lonely word.
Anyway, that was a little rough, but what the hell. Quick correction. I did say on one of the episodes, like, Sinead O'Connor had killed herself. And my mistake, I think that's what everyone assumed. But she actually died of natural causes. Although she was only 56 and she had a rough as hell life. So I'm sure there was just, you know, damage done along the way. I mean, it, you know, natural at 56 is not supernatural. I mean, super space natural, not supernatural, like, you know, magic. But yeah, anyway, she had a rough life, and I hope she's in a better world, which would be pretty easy than this world to make it a better one. I recently read a cool quote from Raymond Chandler, the kind of detective noir writer. He once said that he and Marilyn Monroe they were the only ones that had managed to reach all the brows, high brow, low brow, and middle brow. I thought it was kind of a clever quote. I will be satisfied reaching just any of the brows, except maybe unibrow. And quickly, speaking of a good song, I was talking to a girl at the psych hospital, and we were talking about, like, you know, the 27 Club of musicians and stuff that, you know, so many famous rock musicians, you know, overdosed or committed suicide when they were 27. Kurt Cobain, Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, so on. But one kind of under the radar one is the great singer and songwriter Pete Ham, who was with the band Badfinger. Yeah, he hung himself, had some kids and stuff, and it was pretty tragic. But yeah, they have some great songs, and I've always loved the song No Matter What. Knock down the old gray wall, be a part of it all. Nothing to say, nothing to see, nothing to do. If you would give me all, I would give it to you. Nothing would be, nothing would be, nothing would be. No matter where you go, there will always be a place. Can't you see it in my face, girl? Ooh, girl, won't you? Isn't that nice? Anyway, Pete Ham, rest in peace. And Woody Allen is kind of a sleazoid. And it's kind of tough, you know, like people that I grew up with, like loving their stuff, and you find out later that they're complete scumbags. It's like, shit. I mean, I sometimes try not to watch their newer stuff, but, you know, I can't erase the old memories and the good stuff that they've done, the funny stuff. So, yeah, that's always a hard one. Artists you like that are shitheads. But I did revisit a funny clip from, actually, it's directed by Herbert Ross, who's a pretty good director. It's Play It Again, Sam, 1972. Well, Woody Allen plays like a film critic, and he's obsessed with Casablanca, and like this, like, you know, ghost of Humphrey Bogart comes and talks to him and stuff and gives him advice. He's trying to find a girlfriend. He's kind of getting over a breakup. And anyway, there's a funny scene. He's at a museum with Diane Keaton, and he's like, you know, I got to find someone. And she's like, oh, go talk to her. There's this girl looking at a painting. And he's like, oh, wow, she's great. Yeah, let me go talk to her. And so anyway, he goes over to her, and he's like, that's quite a lovely Jackson Pollock, isn't it? And she says, yes, it is. And he goes, what does it say to you? And then she just says, it restates the negativeness of the universe, the hideous, lonely emptiness of existence. Nothingness, the predicament of man forced to live in a barren, godless eternity, like a tiny flame flickering in an immense void with nothing but waste, horror, and degradation, forming a useless, bleak straitjacket in a black, absurd cosmos. And he says, what are you doing Saturday night? And she says, committing suicide. There's a little bit of a pause. What about Friday night? Which is, you know, pretty tasteless, but it's a cleverly constructed joke. And yeah, so let's start getting light levity. Yeah, I went to elementary school up in Northern California at Valhalla Elementary. This is where I had the girlfriend, where I would, you know, kiss on the cheek and people would like clap. That was probably fourth or fifth grade. I don't think I had a girlfriend for junior high at all. And then most of high school. So fifth grade was where I kind of peaked. But anyway, our mascot was the Valhalla Vikings, you know, pretty cool, pretty awesome, you know, sounding nickname or mascot. And I was on the basketball team, probably like fifth grade, fourth grade, something like that. And for some reason, our name was the Valhalla Hummingbirds. I shit you not. And it's like, we already had, you know, the Vikings, you know, some like badass Mads Mikkelsen shit. And we're called the Hummingbirds, but it turned out to be so appropriate because we were hopeless. We were like worse than the Bad News Bears. We lost every game except one at the, like our last game, we played against a girls team and won. Yeah, not a shining moment in sports. And I was thinking about elementary school the other day, and I remember like when, you know, a bunch of kids, I'm sure everyone has this memory, like, you know, screwing around with the parachute, like, you know, you'd go, you know, whip it way up and then go underneath it and like look at people and stuff. And God, I remember that being fascinating. Such a fun kind of innocent part of a, you know, childhood. And also I used to play, and I'm sure most people did, heads up, seven up in a class where you'd close your eyes and you would go like press someone's thumb. And usually like, you know, I would like press the thumb of a girl I liked. I honestly think that's, I think I pressed the one girl's thumb, and that's the one I actually ended up going out with. Again, going out with meaning nothing. But yeah, that's such a fun, like innocent joy, that memory. And there's this great band, Built to Spill. God, I used to love them. They have a ton of albums, pretty prolific. The great album is Perfect from now on. I remember they did a tour where they played the whole album, and I saw that at the Troubadour in Los Angeles. It was totally awesome. Anyway, they have a song that kind of references both of these kind of childhood things, the parachute and the game, and it's called Twin Falls, and it's a great little song.
Cafeteria Harrison, elementary, beneath a parachute. I saw her without shoes. Seven up, I touched her thumb, and she knew it was me. Although she couldn't see, unless, of course, she peeked.
And yeah, I remember my absolute favorite class, we're jumping ahead here, in senior year at high school was at College Park. We had a bowling class, for goddamn sake. It was like a last period. It was at a bowling alley. We got to like drive from high school to the goddamn bowling alley and bowl. I mean, there was nothing better. That's like top 10 memories of life. And my friend Scott, my buddy Hornbeck, he would always like do this weird spin. And like when he would do it the one, you know, the normal way, we'd call it the Quisenberry after the pitcher, Dan Quisenberry. He kind of did this weird sidearm thing. And then when he would do the opposite way, we'd call it reverse Quisenberry, which kind of sounds like a sex act of some kind. I hope it isn't. But and anyway, it was a great fucking weird term. And every once in a while, we still will say reverse Quisenberry, which probably no one in the world says, which is kind of cool when you come up with a saying and it's like, I don't know if anyone's ever said those two fucking words. With all the people, maybe someone said it, but anyway. And actually I was talking to Scott about this episode and he reminded me, we were like our bowling team in the class. I guess we were like, you know, gonna win it. We were like, you know, it was like all we needed in this final fucking, you know, bowling game was like four more pins. And this guy, Rick, who was a decent bowler, you know, he just had to get four pins in two tries. And I think he guttered the first one and then he got like two on the next. And we were just like, what the hell? You fuck up at the end? And this guy, like me, when I get like embarrassed and stuff or nervous, I get really red. This guy was even worse than me. I mean, he looked like a pulsating tomato when he like turned around. He was an okay guy, kind of a weirdo. That always reminds me of this funny-ass American Idol thing. Simon Cowell's kind of a douche. And I think he's, like, fallen off his fucking motorcycle or bike, like, 20 times and screwed up his back. So I think God is, like, you know, cursing him. But anyway, he does make, like, funny-ass, completely accurate comments sometimes. This one guy, kind of an overweight guy, was singing in the auditions, doing a good job. But he was, you know, just his probably blood pressure was sky high. And he was just red as shit. And so at the end, Simon's like, you look as if you've been boiled, which is so spot on, kind of horrible, but spot on. And around this time in high school, my friends and I would make like short little movies. I think I did one where I was like Freddy Krueger, you know, the little Nightmare on Elm Street thing. It was terrible. I was like, come to God. You know, I had like the worst Freddy Krueger voice. And I did like, I don't know, one scene as like the church lady to the Dana Carvey character from Saturday Night Live. I think I was just saying like, you know, well, isn't that special? But the best one was like a terrible kind of action takeoff where I played Arnold Schwarzenegger. My buddy Randy played Stallone, kind of like as Rambo. And then the villain was my buddy Eric. He was a Colonel Chin, like the evil, you know, bastard villain in it. And he had like a wok on his head. I mean, it was totally ridiculous. But the thing, I don't know, it kind of was funny from what I remember. Again, I have to find this damn thing. But I remember this is part where like we're in the backyard, like we're supposed to be, I don't know, somewhere, some like, you know, Vietnam or something. And, you know, we're going up the hill and I'm like, hey, Randy, I mean, Rambo. Like fuck up his name. And then there is the classic line though that Randy delivers pretty well. We're like supposedly hanging up like by our, you know, arms in this garage. And then I'm like, you know, we got to get out of here. And then Randy, he's like, as Stallone, yeah, I don't like this hanging around, you know, which was pretty damn good. But yeah, it was just so fun. Just being completely silly. You know, girls hadn't really entered the picture yet. And it was just like, you know, dudes being dumb as shit. And you know, I still try to be silly. It's just my nature and I'll probably continue to the end. And the same Eric, a little bit after high school, like, I don't know, a bunch of people were getting together to take like LSD, which is so not my type of thing. It's like, I cannot, when I start to lose control, of my mind, it's like bad times. Some people can get into that stuff. They were like, I was like, okay, fuck it. And they're like, you got to do it with people, man. So I went to this guy's house, a bunch of my friends were there and I took it. And then like, oh God, maybe whatever, when it kicked in 20 minutes later, I'm like, yeah, I have to get out of here. I mean, it was like a Woody Allen scene or something. I completely freaked out. Couldn't be around people. I was like, and they're like, you can't drive, bro. And I was like, well, someone has to get me the fuck out of here. So it actually drove me back to the video store I worked at. I kind of stood in the back of the video store for like several minutes. And yeah, the video store was closed at this time. So it was just me kind of standing there by the phones and stuff. This was before cell phones. And I was just kind of looking out at, you know, there's like lights and stuff, twinkling lights. And, you know, the kind of movie where the movies were, the little aisles was kind of eerie, you know. And it was just like, it was kind of a spooky situation, which seemed like an hour, but maybe it was short. And I would call my girlfriend twice to try and like come pick me up. And she wasn't there yet. It was just all fucked up. My buddy Colin finally picked me up, took me to my parents' house where I lived. I kind of just like somehow on autopilot walked up the stairs, just said, "Hey, I'm back." Thank God they didn't say anything. And then my girlfriend came over. And while I was just, you know, completely tripping out, and she like had a minor form of epilepsy. So while I'm tripping and we're like, you know, sitting there, she starts having a seizure, which was like, oh my God, just too much for my head to understand. It was pretty crazy. It was a wild, yeah. And yeah, I really haven't done LSD since. And that was the video store that, you know, I'd previously mentioned, the Manson family member that used to come in. And when we were working there, you know, we could always like kind of play whatever movies we wanted. And I just had two on like heavy rotation. So anyway, one of them was Bye Bye Birdie from 1963, directed by George Sidney, with Janet Leigh, Dick Van Dyke, Anne Margaret, Bobby Rydell, and Jesse Pearson as Conrad Birdie, this kind of Elvis-y type character that comes to this little town and kind of like everything starts going to hell. And Bobby Rydell is pretty funny in it. His girlfriend is Anne Margaret, and she's like falling for Conrad Birdie. And yeah, so it's pretty fun. And I saw Bobby Rydell once at, there was this like Italian festival they used to have in San Francisco. And he was there and he sang and yeah, seemed like a cool guy. And my other one that I was always playing was Grease from 1978, directed by Randall Kleiser. That's John Travolta, Stockard Channing, Jeff Conaway, and the recently dearly departed Olivia Newton-John. Anyway, the Bye Bye Birdie songs are kind of corny, but anyway, here's one of them. We love you, Conrad. Oh, yes, we do. We love you, Conrad, and we'll be true. When you're not near us, we're blue. Oh, Conrad, we love you. We hate you, Conrad. Oh, yes, we do. We don't hate anyone as much as you. We're... fuck. Your singing makes us say... P.U. Oh, Conrad, we hate you. Sorry for that mess up. But yeah, what a great line. Your singing makes us say P.U. Oh, man. And God, I used to love There Are Worse Things I Can Do, sung by Stockard Channing from Grease. Wow. Yeah, anyway. All right, this one's a little difficult. I've already tried to play it four fucking times and fucked it up, so this is the last one. All right, here we go. I could flirt with all the guys, smile at them and bat my eyes, press against them when we dance, make them think they stand a chance, then refuse to see it through. That's a thing I'd never do. I could stay home every night, wait around for Mr. Right, take cold showers every day, and throw my life away on a dream that won't come true. Not the cleanest version, sorry about that. And there is just a fantastic, just devastatingly amazing song at the end, kind of when Olivia Newton-John, it's kind of like a reprise of like, Look at Me, I'm Sandra Dee, but it's kind of like, you know, before she makes her little change, and it's just a different, it's got this great like instrumental part in the middle, and I completely dig it. But anyway, it's kind of like this. Look at me, there has to be something more than what they see. Wholesome and pure, oh, so scared and unsure, a poor man's Sandra Dee. Sandy, you must start anew.
Don't you know what you must do? Hold your head high. Take a deep breath and sigh. Goodbye to Sandra D.
Almost has like an Elliott Smith vibe or some shit. It's God, that's good. And then another just fantastic song from Olivia Newton-John is she was in this crapola movie, Xanadu, from 1980, directed by Robert Greenwald. Kind of a fiasco. It was a musical. Had like Gene Kelly in it and Michael Beck, whose other big role was The Warriors from 1979, directed by Walter Hill. I never loved that movie. I know people love it, so I feel like kind of an asshole. But anyway, let's not get distracted here. The song is Magic, and it's just got, God, it's got the greatest chorus ever. And this is it, kind of. You have to believe we are magic. Nothing can stand in our way. You have to believe we are magic. Don't let your aim ever stray. And if all your hopes survive, destiny will arrive. I'll bring all your dreams alive for you. I'll bring all your dreams alive for you.
That part is so great, my God. And if all your hopes survive, destiny will arrive. I'll bring all your dreams alive for you.
Just awesome. And just a total kind of guilty pleasure that I used to love as a kid, and I still listen to it. I love the, you know, the hopefulness of it, even when life is garbage. Yeah, it's a great song from the 1982 takeoff of Pirates of Penzance, the pirate movie, which is kind of a cheesy, kind of corny takeoff. It's okay, but it's with Christopher Atkins and Christy McNichol. I used to just be in love with Christy McNichol. Oh, jeez. It was directed by Ken Annakin. Christopher Atkins, kind of a dud of an actor. He was also in the kind of scummy exploitation-ish movie, the Blue Lagoon, from 1980, with Brooke Shields, directed by Randall Kleiser. They're like shipwrecked or something on our island or some shit, and it's just kind of unseemly. And Christy McNichol was in this weird-ass movie called Dream Lover from 1986 by the great Alan J. Pakula. And she has, like, nightmares, and she undergoes these, like, dream therapy things. And I just remember I took some mushrooms when the movie started, and then they hit me, like, in the middle. And the movie is kind of like all these repeating scenes, like repeating dreams. And so I was just like sitting there and I had lost like all concept of time. And I was just like, is that the same one? Is it a new? Didn't I just see this scene? I just had lost the whole bit. But it was entertaining as hell. I can't really remember the movie. I don't even know if I understood it. But just that the weirdness of it was a great time. And so anyway, back to the pirate movie. There's this great song at the end. It's super corny, but uplifting. I still listen to it. It's called Happy Ending. All right, I'm having a real difficulty recording this fucking song. And it's not a hard one, but anyway. When the going's rough and you've had enough, leave your troubles and your woes. Turn the other cheek and forget your grief. Make a friend out of your foe. And give me a happy ending every time. We'll kiss and make up. That's a very peaceful sign. And give me a happy ending every time. Don't be unhappy, everything will work out fine. And really quickly back to Bye Bye Birdie, Paul Lynde was in it. He kind of played a goofy ass character. He was like famously homosexual, super over the top, back when, you know, it was not easy to, you know, be out and about. He was on Hollywood Squares, famously witty. And there's a great little moment I've never forgotten. I didn't see it in person, but I saw it afterwards. But anyway, the host is like asking him, you know, to answer the question. He's like, when a man falls out of your boat and into the water, you should yell, man overboard. Now, what should you yell if a woman falls overboard? And he goes, full steam ahead, which is funny as shit. And I remember I'd always make fun of my boss, who was like a major stoner, but he would always play this movie, this sentimental garbage piece of crap called Heart of Dixie, directed by Martin Davison. And I don't know, it was kind of like a civil rights movie with Ali Sheedy, blah, blah, blah. I remember one time while I was working at the video store, I called to see if a movie had come in yet. And I don't know why, but I did it like as a different voice. Because I was like, if they think I'm going to come get it, maybe they won't rent it to me. But anyway, it was Midnight Run from 1988. And new movies were getting released on Tuesdays, I believe. And yeah, so, but God, Midnight Run, it is just almost a perfect movie. It's one of my favorites. De Niro's like a, you know, a bounty hunter. And he takes Charles Grodin, who's like a former mafia accountant. And he's being chased. And it's just, they kind of form a relationship and become buddies. But it's like, you know, messy along the way. And just, I don't know, Grodin is just always amazing. Charles Grodin's always great. De Niro is funny as hell in it. Dennis Farina is in it. Joe Pantoliano has a funny ass part. And Yaphet Kotto is like one of the, FBI agents. Yaphet fucking Kotto. Just a tall, awesome motherfucker. Yeah, but it's directed by Martin Brest, who also directed Beverly Hills Cop. His career kind of took a shit after the debacle that was the Ben Affleck, Jennifer Lopez vehicle Giggly from 2003. Yeah, he also wrote it, so I guess that was like he was going to be the fall guy for that. But anyway, Midnight Run is a total must-see. The soundtrack by Danny Elfman is so awesome. The infamous line, Serrano's got the discs! Serrano's got the discs! And an interesting movie with Yaphet Kotto. Well, a couple of them. He was in The Star Chamber. This not great, but watchable 1983 thriller by a really good director, Peter Hyams. It's with Hal Holbrook and Michael Douglas. It's kind of like about these like judges and stuff that form this like little star chamber that basically they hand out like judgments for people that have like fallen through the cracks, or if they got, you know, through loopholes, they became innocent. And it just starts to get out of control. I remember it being pretty cool, and Yaphet Kotto's in it, so what the hell. Another cool one is Blue Collar from 1978. It's directed by Paul Schrader. It's his directorial debut. It's written by Paul Schrader and I think his brother or something like that. But it's like about these union workers, Harvey Keitel, Richard Pryor, and Yaphet Kotto. And, they discover corruption. They try and fight it. And it's totally great. I mean, it's got a tragic ending. It's got Yaphet Kotto. It's just like sad in it at the end. Oh, man, it's gripping. It's dated as hell. Richard Pryor's funny as shit in it, but totally worth watching. And there was this weird band. They were called Yaphet Kotto. They were like a hardcore kind of screaming punk band from Santa Cruz, like circa 1996 to 2005. A lot of screaming, but they had some melody in there. Kind of a curiosity. Pretty hard to find. They have some like albums on YouTube. If that sounds like anything up your alley, maybe give it a shot. But they're kind of just a forgotten band, but I've never forgotten them. You know, Yaphet Kotto. It's like pretty awesome. Okay, let's end this episode on a true little fluffy biscuit of a song. It's the catchy, amazing Sky High from 1975 by the band Jigsaw. So anyway, we'll get darker on later episodes, but let's just keep this mood going. Okay, bye. I gave you love. I thought that we had made it to the top. I gave you all I had to give. Why did it have to stop? Blown it all sky high by telling me a lie. Without a reason why, you've blown it all sky high.